Good morning. I'll tell you like I told him at Carrollton last time I spoke. This was Allison's first time to hear Grandpa speak from the pulpit, so I'd understand if she fell asleep on me. So I'll understand if Blake does, but I hope the rest of you stay awake. But they can actually say they fell asleep on Grandpa at least once, maybe. We'll do something I don't normally do, because I don't write very well, but I'm going to write some things, numbers on the board here before I start. I heard a story on the radio, and I kind of wrote it down as I understand it. Well, of course, when you're driving 70 mile an hour down the road, you don't want to be writing, so you kind of try to remember things. There's a story about a clockmaker assembling a clock. The tiny clock was worried as it thought about the big task ahead of it. One tick each second every day of its life. The number was astounding to him. How could he ever manage to do it? Then he began to think how important his task is, as people would depend on him to tell them when to be where they need to be and how much time they had left to get there. How would I ever do it, as I am not able? The clockmaker looked at him and said, "Oh, yes, you are. You're capable of doing it. You just have to do it one step at a time." The clock said, "Yes, I think I can do that," at which time he began to tick, one tick at a time. What was the problem? The clock was focused on the enormity of the task ahead of him and not the amount of ability he had. He wasn't worried about the one tick per second. He was worried about the 60 ticks per second, per minute, the 3,600 ticks an hour, the 31,536,000 ticks a year that he would have to do. Don't check my addition on that, by the way. I did it last night on my calculator and my phone, and it's a smartphone, but it ain't because the guy that operates it smart. But he was worried about the enormity of the task ahead of him. He lost the focus on the small stuff. I told the kids my topic today was going to be the small stuff. Lisa said I ought to take Blake up with me and say, "Here's the small things," but I didn't do that. But he lost sight of the small picture, and he was focused on the big picture. And I think that's a lesson for us. Yes, we all think about the big picture, but yet I sometimes think it's at the cost of the small picture. I have a big picture. My big picture 2 months ago was to get my kitchen remodeled and done. I'm now within 2 days of having that done. Cabinets are in, countertops are on, and the floor is about to be done. But 3 months ago, that looked like a long ways away. If I'd have looked at that 3 months ago and thought, "Oh, we'll never get it done," we probably would have never started on it. And on behalf of Marvin and Meld, I think they're probably glad we're about done, because we've had to eat at their house a lot in the last 3 months. But if we'd have thought about the enormity of it, we probably would not have done the job. But we did not lose sight of the small picture of how nice it will look when it's done. There are always going to be good things and bad things happening to us. A couple days ago, I got a call at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. First thing I heard from my dispatcher was, "Okay, I need 20 seconds of your time, and I don't want any responses. I'm going to tell you what has to happen." I'm going, "Oh, great." He says, 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, you're leaving for Fort Dodge, because there's a technician up there that's been fighting a fry tank for 8 hours now, and he's frustrated, and the customer's frustrated, and he doesn't know what to do. That technician was in the Fort Dodge, away from any help, and he was looking at the big picture. He was tackling a job that he had no idea what he was doing. And 2 hours into the job, when this customer's wanting to use his piece of equipment, he was nowhere near ready to give it back to him. He was getting frustrated. They were getting frustrated. He lost track of the small picture. He had a series of 6 screws. If he would have taken out, he would have been able to finish that job to where they could have used a piece of equipment. But yet I had to go back up there the next day and tell me that was the most worrisome night I had, because I hate when that happens. Because when I think about it for the hour and a half drive before Dodge, okay, what am I getting into? He's sitting there beside me, and he can't tell me really anything. What am I getting into? Am I going to have a customer ready to throw a frying pan at me and walk through the door? I was worried about the big picture, lost track of the small picture. I got up there, and in 3 hours, we had the whole job done. Customer was happy, I was happy, and he was happy. But he lost sight of the small picture, looking at the big picture. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 gives us an indication. The things are, there's going to be a big and a small picture in everything we do. Ecclesiastes, well, I'll get that one out yet. I'm not reading the one about the fiery darts today, so that's probably a good thing. Starting in the first verse, to everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rent, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. To everything there is a season, and to every purpose under and a time to every purpose under heaven. I, standing here today, have a purpose under heaven. God put me on this earth for a reason. And that reason was to serve Him. I have had a lot of things happen in my life that weren't positive. I've had a lot of negatives. Which do I decide to dwell on? The positives or the negatives? I choose to dwell on the positives, but use the negatives as a stepping stone to become stronger. But if I wake up in the morning and I look at the big picture and I think, oh great, here I go into another day. I'm going to struggle through the day and I'm not going to be very productive. If I wake up in the morning and I think, great, today's another day. I can increase my abilities and I can learn from things I do. I'll be a good employee at work. Why so then would it not be that way with God? If I wake up in the morning and think, oh great God, what are you holding in store for me today? Am I looking on the positive side or the negative side of serving God? I'm on the negative side. I have 86,400 ticks of the clock of what God can throw at me today. Or I have 86,400 ticks of the clock of what I can do for God today. How can I be productive for Him? We can make mountains or we can make molehills. I'm a mountain maker, usually not a molehill maker. Because I'll worry about the dumbest things, and I'll get myself all worked up about it, because I'll make mountains out of it, out of molehills. You know, 40 years ago, I hate talking like that. You know, I'm not that old, but I'm over 50 now, so I got, you know, what, 35, 40 years ago when I started speaking at Chapel Glen, getting up in front of the group was a mountain to me. And it's that way for some of the people in this group right now that are starting to get up. But nowadays, it's a molehill. Now, for some of you, it might be a mountain trying to understand what I'm speaking of half the time. Other ones, it might be a molehill. But I make mountains or molehills out of what I do and by how I use my time. And that's what he's telling us in Ecclesiastes. We're either looking at the mountains or we're looking at the molehills. Because there's going to be a time for everything. God told Noah when he came out of the ark, there's going to be summer, winter, springtime, and harvest, good times and bad. God told us back then it was going to be that way. Why would we be surprised today when those things happen to us? We just need to take it one tick of the clock at a time, because that's all we need to worry about. Matthew chapter 6, starting in the 34th verse. Matthew chapter 6. I almost messed up in class this morning because I forgot to verify my scriptures, and I was doing that, and then Greg decided it was time to start reading again. And I had turned way far away from 1 Corinthians. I'm racing back trying to find 1 Corinthians this morning. I almost messed up in class. Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 34. Take there no thought, therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. How easy is that for us to do, taking no thought thereof for the morrow? I'm already thinking about tomorrow, and I'm thinking about Tuesday, and I'm thinking about Wednesday, and I'm thinking about Thursday. I'm not thinking about today. I've got enough to keep track of today. And he tells us here to take no thought for tomorrow. It's going to come, but why worry about it? There, you need to worry enough about today, because the evil it is in today is enough to keep us busy. Sufficient unto the day is evil thereof. I think there is a lesson in this for all of us. We need to focus on the task directly in front of us, not the task 2 days from now. Think about the task 2 days from now, but don't dwell on it, because you need to dwell on today and what is coming at you today. Directly in front of us, Matthew chapter 6, same chapter, the 33rd verse. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And I think we do that by seeking God first. If I go on a job at work, and I'm the only technician who knows how to work on this piece of equipment, I'm on my own. I can call the factory. They're going to give me some advice, but I'm the one standing there turning the wrenches or pulling the wires and checking the voltages and the amperages and all that. I'm the one that's responsible for it. When I'm working with God, I'm not responsible to be by myself. God will be there with me. He will be there every tick of that clock if I will allow him to be there. If I seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all those things shall be added unto me. So we need to seek him first. We need to make an effort. Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. We have a helper in God, in Christ. They will help us through every tick of the clock in our lives. When the clock begins ticking, does it begin ticking on its own and by itself and does everything by itself? No. It has help. It either has a pendulum that swings back and forth. I have one Trent made me in school, has a pendulum on it. And I've moved it around 4 or 5 times now, and that pendulum bangs off the glass and bangs back and forth. But every time, it starts right back up and starts keeping time again. But the pendulum without the gears is of no effect. It could swing back and forth all day, and nothing's going to happen. It's got gears to help it move. It has counterweights. It has counterweights to help move it up and down if it's a grandfather clock. It even has batteries if it needs to be, to help it power everything up. And it has electricity. Those clocks back there without electricity would be on the same time tonight when we walk in, if we walked in the building, because there's nothing to make it run. It's not going to magically take off and run. All those things work in common to keep the clock running and being productive. As we found in Matthew chapter 7, we as Christians are not doing it alone. We may think we're alone sometimes, but we're not doing it alone. The problem is we forget to seek and to ask and to find. We forget to ask God for help. Matthew chapter 11, starting the 28th verse. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. God is willing to help us if we will only come to him and ask for help. The clock without the help of the pendulum or the batteries or the electricity is of no use. You'll be late to work every morning. You'll be late to your appointments. It'll be of no effect. You'll just be hanging on the wall, doing nothing for you. The clock with all its parts works in unison together. It only takes one person with God's help to make a difference in somebody's life or in our lives. David took down a giant with God's help. David didn't doubt that he could take down that giant because he knew God was with him. God would help him take down that giant. All the other soldiers are standing around scared to death, wanting to hide behind rocks. David says, I'll do it. And he took 5 stones and a sling. And he took down the giant. With God behind me, I can take down the giants. Because God will help me direct my stones where they need to go. God will tell me where I need to be and what I need to do. And all I need is one rock and God's help, and I can take down the giants. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego turned around a king, as did Daniel. I want you to bow to me. I want you to bow to me when you hear the sound of all these fancy instruments that are playing for me, because this is my kingdom. Well, 4,500 bazillion people bowed down. 3 stayed standing. How embarrassing is it to be standing and everybody else is sitting down? Would have been just as easy for them to sit down and not be noticed and still serve God. But they knew that they would be showing reverence to somebody other than God if they did that. You take a group of technicians, you put them in their work environment, or you take anybody in their work environment, they're going to yak, have fun, talk, be silly, do things to each other. Put those same people in a room at a class somewhere out of town where they don't know everybody's around them and see how quiet they are. I've got guys that I work with that they can't shut their mouths. They got to be talking. You get them to a class, you won't hear a peep out of them. I'm the same way. You won't hear a peep out of me. I could be going, yeah, okay, I understand. And the guy will say, anybody questions? I don't want to be the first guy to ask a question. You know, all I hear is that clock ticking. Is this class about over? I don't want to look stupid, but being the one to quit asking them questions. So I'm the one that has to ask the questions. I need to be the one that turns things around with God's help. I'm in amongst a generation of people that may not believe in God all the time. Am I the one willing to stand up and show that I have God as my witness and behind me? There's an interesting story in Mark chapter 12, the 41st through 44th verses. Mark chapter 12. If you think the little things don't matter, I think Mark 12 tells us it does. And Jesus sat over against the treasury, and behold, how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in 2 mites with that which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto them, Verily I say unto you, take this poor, that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all she had, even all her living. Do you think when this woman saw all these people going by tossing in the big amounts of money and everything they had, she didn't hear that clock ticking? Oh, great, here comes my time to give. Great, everybody's going to be watching me because they've been caught tossing in bunches of money. Here, I'm going to just drop in my 2 little pennants, my little bit of money, the 2 mites. I see her cheerfully walking up and dropping her money in the collection because that's all she had to give. But did she hear the clock ticking? I kind of figure she probably did a little bit. She was worried maybe a little bit that what people might think of her. But she knew she had a higher authority to please, and that was God. She cast in all she had, and she served God in her own heart and mind at that point in time. We're told to do all we can with what we have. I don't have the ability to sing as good as other people, but I have the ability to sing. I don't have the ability to talk as good as other people, but I can still give lessons. I don't have the ability to get up and do an impromptu class. Some people do, but yet I can get up and have a class if I have to. I can get up and give a reading. We all have our abilities, and all God asks is that we give what little bit we can. Don't sit there and listen to the clock and think, well, if I get up there now, I've got another 20 minutes to go. I'm a little worried I can do 20 minutes. You know, worry about making the best of the seconds you have right now as you're doing them. Another good example is in Luke chapter 19, starting in the first verse. Luke chapter 19, starting in the first verse. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not see for the press, because he was of little stature. And he ran before and climbed up into the sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying, that he was gone to be a guest with a man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, that this day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Zacchaeus was a small man. Zacchaeus knew he had issues in his life that needed to be taken care of. How many times had Zacchaeus heard the clock ticking, and thought, I need to make some changes in my life. And he heard Christ was coming, and he decided to make a change in his life. Had he looked at the big picture and thought, I'm so short, I'll never see him, I just need to turn around and go home. I'll never be seen by Christ, I'll never be noticed by him, what good am I? No, he made an effort to be seen by Christ. He climbed the tree so Christ could see him. And Christ saw him and invited him and said, I'm coming to your house today. My house isn't very presentable at this moment. It's a presentable, not real presentable. You might be sitting on dirt floor in my front room because there's no carpet there. I've gotten a few splinters from it recently, trying to scoot across and pull all the little carpet tacks out. It's not my job, but got to get them up. But you hear Zacchaeus saying, oh, wait, you can't come to my house. My house isn't in order today. No, he took Christ and he took Jesus and went to his house. But I'm interested in verse 7. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be a guest with a man that is a sinner. I think that's a statement for us to think about on a daily basis. He went to be a guest with a sinner. I'm not encouraging us to go out and be guests with sinners, but I'm encouraging us to be like Christ and look for people that need help, people that are sinners, because that's how we're going to increase the growth of the church. We're going to bring people to Christ. There may be people standing in trees right now looking for help. We need to be willing to look for them. Not be so concerned if somebody's going to look at me and say, what are you doing hanging around with that person? Well, I'm doing some good for that person, I hope. We need to be willing to do that for them. Not to sit around there listening for the clock to tick. Well, somebody else going to help them? Somebody else going to help them? Looking at the big picture thing, if I help them, I'm going to be looked down on by other people. Because the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. And I don't think there's one of us sitting here today that can't say, I wasn't that one. He was coming to seek and save because I was lost. We need to seek in those that are among us that need to be saved. You know what? We don't need to be Noah to build an ark. We don't need to be a Noah and build an ark. We only need to provide a safe passageway for those in need. Noah built an ark and delivered 8 people and many, many animals. We don't need to build an ark to save more than one at a time. That's all we have to do. We don't need to build an ark and try to bring in everybody at one time. We just need to be willing to serve work with one person. We don't need to be willing to take down an entire kingdom like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were. We only need to find people looking for assistance that need help. You know, if I stand here today and I think, well, you know, there's a lot of people out there I can go work with, but there's a lot of work involved there. You know, I could go start a study with somebody. It only takes me a half hour, 45 minutes out of my day. But yet, that's going to take me 6 months. That's 6 months. 45 minutes a time, 6 months. That's just a lot of work. You know, I got better things I can do. And I'm not sure I'm that qualified to talk for 45 minutes for 6 months in a row. Well, we're looking for excuses. We're looking at the big picture, not the small picture at that point in time. We need to be willing to look for the people in the chariot that are looking for answers. Acts chapter 8, starting in the 26th verse. Acts chapter 8, starting in the 26th verse. And the angel of the Lord spake unto Philip, saying, Arise, and go toward the south into the way that goeth down from Jerusalem unto Gaza, which is desert. And he arose and went, and behold, a man of Ethiopian, and eunuch of great authority under Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who had the charge of all her treasure, and had come to Jerusalem for to worship, was returning, and sitting in his chariot, read Esaias the prophet. Then the Spirit said unto Philip, Go near and join thyself to this chariot. And Philip ran thither to him and read him the prophet Esaias, and said, Understandest thou what thou readest? And he said, How can I except some man should guide me? And he desired Philip that he would come up and sit with him. The place of scripture which he read was this, He was led as a sheep to the slaughter, like a lamb dumb before a shearer, so opened he not his mouth. And his humiliation, his judgment was taken away, and who shall declare the generation? For his life is taken from the earth. And a eunuch answered Philip and said, I pray thee, of whom speaketh the prophet, this of himself or of some other man? Then Philip opened his mouth and began at the same scripture and preached unto him Jesus. And as we know the result story, the man was baptized. We have many examples in scriptures where God tried to send people. Jonah decided it wasn't worth it. I'm taking another route. We have many examples in scriptures where God tried to send people. Moses, go talk to Pharaoh. I'm not capable. I'm not good with my tongue. I'm not powerful enough. God always provided help. All they had to do was ask for the help. God provided the help to Moses, and he'll provide the help to us. I don't see Philip thinking, well, I was really on my way to do something else here. You know, I really got something I need to do down the road there a ways. No, he stopped, dropped what he was doing, and ran and went to the chariot and joined himself to it because he saw the need that the God put in front of him, and he went and took care of that need. That's all we need to do is see the need in front of us. Not look at the big picture, look at the small things, the little things we can do right now to bring people to Christ. I used to, on my laptop, I don't have it there now, it's saved in somewhere in my laptop. I used to have a picture of the front of this building, and I went to a class in last November in Chicago, and I had my laptop sitting on top of the desk, and we were going around looking at pieces of equipment and working on them, and I heard people talking about, you know, what church do you go to? I wonder what church he goes to. So I got into some discussions with people about church. And it was interesting. But probably didn't have a lot of effect on them at that, because I don't know them that well. I mean, they were gone after I left the class. But boy, why am I not that willing to have my laptop sitting there right now on my desk at work when I'm sitting at a class and have the church thing on it? Now I got a picture of two semi-trucks. You know, why would I have that and not have a picture of the church on the front of the building? What's going to spark more conversation? I'm guessing probably the church picture, because people are going to wonder about it. We only need to be doing the best we can. I only need to be doing the best Doug can do, 1 second at a time, 1 hour a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But it all starts with 1 second every day, doing the best I can. I don't know how many seconds I've been up here talking. I hope I made a lot of some sense to you folks today. But as we come to the close of the service, we're always asked to examine ourselves. And we're asked to remember that the clock is ticking. There is a clock that is ticking that will have an eternal effect on us. These clocks can quit running and we can find other ones. The clock of our life quits running and we have reached our eternity. That clock, time we walk in here Wednesday night, will have ticked several thousand more times, not even thinking about it. It just does it. But yet, there's no guarantee I'm going to be here Wednesday night to see that clock ticking again. But that's when my clock quits running. That's when I realize that I have to answer the question, was I so focused on the things far away that I forgot about the immediate need, the need of my soul to be part of Christ's family? As we close each service, we're asked to examine ourselves and realize the clock is ticking and ask ourselves, have we been baptized? Have we turned our lives over to Christ? Have we become a member of His family? Because if we have not, the clock will run out eventually, and there's no guarantee when that will be. If we have for some reason accepted Christ, well, not for some reason accepted Christ, we have accepted Christ and for some reason have fallen away and let the cares of this world overcome us, and we focus too much on the big picture instead of the small picture, we're always given the opportunity to become one with Christ again as we stand and sing the closing song.